Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
I'm Roman Mars, host of 99% Invisible. I love the book, The Power Broker, the epic biography of former New York City planner Robert Moses. So I'm breaking it down 100 pages at a time and talking to special guests about why this book matters, like Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
I actually think if it wasn't for Robert Moses, I probably wouldn't have run for Congress.
Listen to 99% Invisible's breakdown of The Power Broker every month on the 99% Invisible podcast feed.
This on? Hello?
We're all science people.
Science? Exactly.
We know it's a good idea because it's lasted.
There's chemistry in here. There's biology in here.
It's in whiskey. It's in ice cream. It's in who you fall in love with.
Rules.
And ethics. And everything else.
We can make the world better for everybody.
Starting now.
Welcome to Science Rules. I'm your host, Bill Nye. This is the show where science rules. Now, everybody, it's a call-in show. The best part of the show is your questions. I mean, of course, the whole show is great, but your questions are the best part for me. So if you want to be on the show, and I hope you do, please go to askbillnye.com and type on it. I want to hear from you people. Tell us what's on your mind. Tell us what you want to know. And I am once again joined by science writer and editor, longtime friend, Corey S. Powell. Greetings, Corey.
Hey, Bill. Good to be podcasting with you here.
Everybody out there is trying to live longer. If you're a guy as old as I am, you watch cable news. In fact, if you watch the morning news on regular networks, it's all about these medicines. It's just one after another. And of course, there are extraordinary side effects. And all the things you're going to do to live a long life. There's a big emphasis right now on antioxidants. Is it blueberries? Is it red wine? Is it coffee? Is coffee good for you? Is coffee bad for you? Are antioxidants really a real thing? And so on and so on. And why do people care? Because we don't want to die. We all want to know how to live the longest life we can. So today we're going to get all the tips we can on how to live a long life. Or maybe it's actually about living a good life. Here to help us is the director of the Institute for Aging Research at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, Dr. Nir Barzilai. Doctor, thank you for taking the time to come in. Dr. Barzilai.
Nir, what made
you think you could do something about it?
Well, you guys know more than anyone that we think that kids have great imagination, right? But I realized when I was 13 that kids don't have that of great imagination because they don't see their grandparents as what they're going to become. They see their grandparents as, I don't know how he was born that way, but good for him, you know. And I'm walking with my grandfather, who was then about 68 and died later that year from heart disease. And he's telling me about these wonderful things he did when he was young. And I'm looking at this guy who's kind of obese and walks slowly. And I'm saying, I'm missing something. And even when I became a doctor, I wanted to understand this phenomenon of aging. And it's interesting, I had this attending who, when I presented...
Attending is a person.
Attending physician.
Yeah. Yes.
Sorry. Who, when we went to rounds, it wasn't enough to say this guy is 59 years old, but does he look younger or older than his age? And all of a sudden, you realize that biological age and chronological age are not the same. So what is it that some people look like they age real slow and some really fast and they die fast? And this is the fascination that carried me to say, nobody knows those things about aging. Why don't I try? Well, you know, aging the way we have it now is not inevitable. We can do a lot about aging. And the most important thing that we can do is we can increase the health span. You know, our maximal lifespan.
Okay, so you're distinguishing between a lifespan and a health span.
Right. Our lifespan as species is about 115 years. You know, we argue because there's actually somebody who lived 122 years. But we die before the age of 80 after suffering a lot of diseases. So we have like 35 years that we can realize. And actually now we're beginning to understand scientifically how to realize those years.
I mean, we're 35 years, we could be a lot more productive instead of dead.
Correct. And, you know, 100 years old, the nice thing about them is they are healthy. So they can be working, they can be doing things that you know, 60, 70, 80 years old are doing, because it's all about their health and not about their diseases.
What are these people, the centenarians, people live over 100, what is it they're doing that many other people are not doing?
I really regret you ask me these questions because I don't know how to get it right now. I'm going to tell you nothing, which you can come and say, well, everything we're taught was wrong.
But nobody's teaching us this. They're just talk shows in the morning claiming that if you eat the certain fruit 3 times a day, you'll have superpowers and live to be over 100 and you can bench press cars. But you're saying there is no secret like that.
Our centenarians, they were overweight. 50% of them were overweight or obese throughout their lives. 60% of the men and 30% of the women have smoked more than 2 packs a day. We have a woman who died at 110, celebrating over 90 years of 2 packs of cigarette smoking.
She's an outlier.
So do these people just have amazing genes?
Exactly.
Is that what you're trying to figure out?
Exactly, because it's in spite of that. So while I'm telling you they didn't less than 50% exercise, I'm talking walking or housework, only 2% were vegetarian. So I'm not saying that exercise and obesity and stuff are not important. I'm just saying that those people were protected, and that's what makes them more interested, because what is the biological protection that they have? What are the longevity genes that they have that protects them and get them to be healthy for so long? So we have a lot of centenarians. We have 700 centenarians and their families. And one of the...
This is
at Albert Einstein College of Medicine. And we've accumulating those centenarians. I can tell you more about that. But the first thing we wanted to ask is their health span and lifespan goes together? Because if they are sick, when other people got sick at age 70, then what can they teach us? But in fact, their accumulation of disease is also 20, 30 years more than controls. Our controls, those without longevity, at age 80, only 10% of them don't have any major disease. Our centenarians, even over the age of 100, 30% of them don't have a disease. But this is not really the most important thing. The important thing is that at the end of their lives, they have what we scientists call a contraction of morbidity. They spend much less time being sick.
They spend much less time dying.
Exactly. Mm. And by the way, this was confirmed by other studies from the CDC, the Center of Disease Control, that looked at the actually medical cost in the last 2 years of life of somebody who dies after the age of 100 versus those who die after the age of 70. And it's third the cost.
It seems to me to be even less than that. Because after you're 100 and you feel like you're going to die, you just check out. You don't do all these extraordinary things to try to hang in there and hang out with your grandkids or whatever the heck it would be.
Well, exactly. But that's the contraction of morbidity. And that's why we know that we can extend health span, because there's a human example for that.
Stick around for more science rules after this.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
Science Rules is back.
I want to really drill down on this genes versus environment question, and I have a feeling
we have the perfect caller.
I have a feeling one of our callers is going to help us do that. We have a Marianne on the line. Marianne, are you there?
I am here, yes.
Where are you calling from?
Where is here?
No, Corey, you ask.
I am in Burlington, Vermont right now.
And it's a lovely day, snowy. What have we got?
Oh, it's both of those things. It's a lovely day and snowy, yes.
And are you growing older day by day?
Well, my philosophy is because I live in a cold state, it's like a refrigerator. It kind of keeps me fresh and young as long as possible, I think.
You should go inside once in a while. But go ahead with your question.
Unless you're hibernating during the winter.
Oh, yes, yes. Hibernating, eating lots of ice cream, getting ready for the thaw. Yes. Okay, so my question is, what are the real true pieces to longevity? I mean, how much is actually related to diet, to happiness, to genetics, attitude, where I live? Things like that.
You gave this question in one sentence, and I even don't know where to start the next hour.
I'm sorry. But I
want to make maybe a few points, and maybe you'll help me later. But I just want you to understand that my story now was about exceptional longevity and about people that have help that we don't have. So I'm stepping back from that, and I'm just telling you that the most important thing to target aging as far as the environment is exercising. This is number one. This works at every age, at every sex. It's always good to exercise. The second thing that I would tell you now, if you want to really be proactive, one of the things that we're doing in my lab, we were doing forever, is doing this experiment of caloric restriction. When you take animals, variety of animals, and you caloric restrict them, then they live longer.
Meaning you just give them a very low calorie diet.
Right. In rodents, we give them 30 or 40% less, and we get an extension of lifespan of 40%. By the way, not lifespan only, but health span. You know, you check everything and everything is better. Everything is delayed. So that means, what does that mean when people are hearing about it? They said, let's cut calories, you know, at breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
I'm just wondering, are the rats still able to function? Are they still able to do rat computations, whatever, maze running, whatever
a rat is
requested?
They're cognitively better. They're metabolically better. They really keep functions much, much longer. And they die kind of, the end of their life, they die kind of fast. They have a rectangulation of their mortality.
What did you call it? Contracted morbidity?
Contracted morbidity, yeah. Right.
So you're healthy, you're dead.
Right.
Okay.
But that's not what we did to those rodents. We would come in the morning and give them the food, the allowance for the day. They were hungry. They were eating it in half an hour, and then they were fasting for 24 hours more, for 23 hours more. So now, and by the way, when we did the experiment now, where we gave rodents, you know, lettuce or casein, a big bulk with food, and they ate a lot because there was little food, but they could eat. So they ate just enough to be caloric restricted. They didn't live longer. You need the fasting, okay? You need the fasting in order to upregulate the defense for aging, for the biology.
So, Marianne, do you do something to live long?
Certainly not fasting, except if you count when I'm asleep. I try to eat at least 3 meals a day. I try to eat healthy meals, but I exercise. I try to meditate. I engage in activities that bring me great joy, but not the fasting because food brings me so much joy.
So, Nir, do we know that fasting works in humans and not just in rodents?
We don't, but we're doing those experiments now because we know what biology to test. And the question for us is how long does it take to fast in humans in order to get those things? By the way, I'm doing those experiments now on myself. I'm doing this intermittent fasting. I almost fast every day now.
Are you hungry right now?
No, by now I'm not hungry because I have ketones that makes the, so now I can actually go. I was hungry like an hour ago. I was debating whether I should have something with my coffee before I got in, but I'm really good now. And I hope I'm not saying anything that's nonsense.
Well, you just said ketones. What do we mean by ketones?
Ketones is chemicals that are reflecting the fact that we went from using carbohydrates for metabolism to using fat as metabolism. Because during the fasting, then you start switching. Your glucose that you accumulate in glycogen is limited and you start using fat now. And actually, if you give ketotic diet, diet with those ketones to rodents, they live long like caloric-restricted animals. So this is part of this story. But I have to tell you, I do it for 16 hours or 24 hours, but then I eat whatever I want. And it's not an effort to lose weight. I've been losing a little weight, but that's not the idea. The idea is to get the biology rolling.
So I was brought up, breakfast is the rudder of the day. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Nir, you're shaking your head.
I think when the field of diet was established, they had to make some assumptions. Unfortunately, there were wrong assumptions at the wrong time. One of them is, three times a day and breakfast is the most important. When in evolution did the cavemen wake up and had cereal and cake and bread for breakfast? They started running after deers and catching them at night and having barbecue and leftovers during the day. So, and then 65% carbohydrate. I mean, Marie Antoinette was there for 1,000 years with cakes and 65% carbohydrate. And,
yes.
And on top of that, then there's the epidemic of obesity. And now, on top of having 3 meals a day and a lot of carbohydrate, all of a sudden you also got fat. And it's really a shame. But I'm talking from the perspective of aging. From the perspective of aging, it's the period of fasting that probably can help more than having 3 meals a day, even with lower calories.
How often would I have to have this period of 16 to 24 hours of fasting to reap the benefit?
So I'll tell you that we don't really know. So I don't, there's no clinical study like that. So I'm telling you about a state of the art that's being developed. I don't want to say anything, but I was planning initially to do it once or twice a week. And I think that's what people are doing. They're trying to do it twice a week. I found it so easy to do that I'm just doing it whenever I can. But my wife cannot. She can go until lunch, but then she gets headache. And maybe that's enough time. She's doing maybe 16 hours, 14 to 16 hours. Maybe it's enough for her. So I think we really don't know. I'm really telling you the biology part, and the rest is very experimental. A lot of people are doing that, though.
Thank you, Marianne. And I'm glad you're taking care of yourself. And laughing is, I think, a key.
And my daughter went to Middlebury, so I had lots of good meal in Burlington.
Yes, see? Okay, wonderful. Thank you all so much for adding moments and maybe years onto my life. Thank you.
Thank you, Marianne.
Years!
Guys, can I just ask you?
Please.
There's a study that I'm leading that's going to really change. I don't know if you heard about TAME or you saw it. You know about TAME?
No. TAME's an acronym?
It's for targeting aging with metformin. It's about taming aging. There is a drug by the name of metformin that a lot of the audience will know because it's the first drug of choice to treat type 2 diabetes.
This is late onset diabetes.
Right. 60 years of experience, great safety record, and it's generic and cheap. It's one of the cheapest drugs in the United States. You get 600 pills for like $40. And metformin, if you give to animals, to nematodes, to other animals, they all live longer and healthier.
God, nematodes love the metformin.
They do. Humans, okay, so the metformin prevents diabetes, okay, in non-diabetic people.
Oh, so it makes, it helps you in produce insulin somehow?
No, actually, it's not. It actually cures the aging part, okay, mainly. So it makes your body more sensitive to insulin because the cells are functioning better. So metformin, when you give it to diabetic patients in a control study, it prevents cardiovascular disease by 30%. Wow. When you look at what metformin does to cancers in people, in diabetic patients, it decreased cancer by 30%.
This is all good.
When you look at cognitive function, they have less, 30% less cognitive function. When you look at mortality,
I mean less, loss of cognitive function.
So, yes. when you look at mortality, people with diabetes on metformin that have diabetes, they are also more obese and they are more sick. They have 17% less mortality than people without diabetes who are not obese.
So then why are we not all on metformin, or should we all be on metformin?
So no, the answer is no, because we need to do this study and I don't want to ruin it. So we came to the FDA and said, look, there is a drug that we would like to repurpose. So now the FDA knows, first of all, everything they want to know about metformin is in their web. And second, we're scientists. We're not coming with the pharmaceuticals who have crazy idea and resources, okay? And we're saying, let's see what study we should do in order for you to approve an indication. And by the way, we all agreed not to call it aging, you know, because aging, you know, first of all, what? Not everybody who's old has a disease. And there's ageism, okay? So we said, let's think how we do it. And we gave them a proposal and we negotiated them, and we can actually do the study. And we're going to start the study with the American Federation of Aging Research. It's interesting that the NIH found the study too risky, although we have all those preliminary data that metformin did it in different population, but not together. So once we have that, then the healthcare providers will give metformin. It's by the way, very cheap. But more important, the pharmaceuticals will jump in. The pharmaceuticals don't jump in because there's no business plan if you don't have indication. So we are paving the road because I'll tell you, there are much better drugs, combination of drugs that are in the pipeline right now.
These are things that will be designed for not accidentally found.
Right. For design, because exactly, because we know mechanisms for aging and we can target them specifically. And that's the future that is really at our doorstep.
All right. Hold that thought, because I think our next caller is going to tie into this.
Our next caller is going to be brilliant.
Well, of course. Well,
yes.
Sure.
Because it's Julia. We have Julia on the line.
Oh, Julia. She's amazing.
I love Julia. Yeah.
Julia. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Fairfax, Virginia.
Ah, yes. The home of the Jubilaires barbershop singing group.
Huh. Yes, I'm getting some reaction about that.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
So, Julia, go ahead. You have a question.
Yes. Well, I'm a teacher, and my students have been learning about chromosomes.
What year do you teach?
Is it true that...
What grade?
Oh, I teach ninth grade bio. I also teach AP biology, so I have both ends.
There you go.
Excellent.
Of the spectrum. But we've discussed this before in class. Is it true that if we could figure out a way to preserve human telomeres, we could increase human longevity?
So the telomeres are the caps, these kind of genetic caps on our chromosomes. The telomere length has been associated with longevity, and I see Nir nodding. Nir, give me the lowdown here. Is
right.
this a real
in
thing?
In fact, our centenarians have long telomeres, and their children have even longer telomeres. And we found even genetic mutations in the telomerase gene that is controlling the length of telomeres.
So does this drug affect the length of telomeres?
No, because this is the problem. You know, first of all, we don't really think that the length of telomeres are really a major driver of aging.
It's not
we
the
don't
cause.
Think so.
It's not the cause. It's this artifact of some sort.
If you increase this telomerase, if you increase the telomeres length, most rodents will get cancers. Cancers have very long telomeres.
No, they don't.
If
want
you
that.
Shorten the telomeres in rodents, they don't age, at least not in the first generation.
How do you shorten a telomere?
You can knock out the telomerase.
Okay, so the enzyme.
The enzyme that controls the length.
And you knock it out with
you
a
knock
drug?
It out, and no, you knock it out genetically.
Before they're born.
Before they're born, and then they have short telomeres, they live long, normal lifespan.
How do you
lifespan.
Knock it out with. You go to knockitout.com. How do you knock it out?
Well, it's easy now with the CRISPR technology, mm-hmm. but it was done many years ago mm-hmm. by other technologies. It's a gene that it's not knocking out the telomeres. It's knocking out the gene that elongates the telomeres.
Right, so it's a okay? genetic engineering
so
technique.
It's a genetic.
Oh yeah,
genetic
it's just simple enough. Yeah, it's combined.
I'm doing some genetic
regularly interspaced
right
short
while we're
palindromic
podcast.
Repeats. Yeah. I mean, if that's what you mean, just say it.
Right, that's the definition of telomeres. But the point is that because telomeres are really not the cause of aging, and because the treatment seems to be risky, okay, we're not talking about that as one of the options. But I'll tell you something else. Out there, people can measure your telomeres, okay, and this is what was found pretty much. People with the longest telomeres for their age have an increased chances of getting cancers. People with the shortest telomere have increased chances of getting cardiovascular disease. So you want to be somewhere in the middle, but it has really poor predictive.
The cause and effect is not clear at all.
Not very much.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that, you know, there are diseases where the length of telomeres is really rate limiting, but I'm saying this is not our major target for aging.
So something I have wondered about since it was published, hang on there, Julia, is Dolly the sheep.
Yeah.
Okay, Dolly the sheep was created by squirting another sheep's genes into an egg, right?
Right. It was a cloned sheep, so.
Cloned sheep.
The first
and Dolly
sheep.
The sheep's telomeres were shorter than standard ewe, but her offspring have regular telomeres.
And Dolly herself lived a normal lifespan.
Yeah, and her kids, which are literally called kids in the land of sheep, aren't they, are roaming the Scottish hills even today. So maybe the telomeres ain't got no nothing to do with anything, employing a triple negative for comedic effect.
Well, again, let me use it to really talk to you about the hope of what we're doing. You can take a sperm of a 60-year-old man, right, and an egg of a 50-year-old woman, right? 50-year-old women now can have kids.
Why is they can do it now? They didn't used to be able to.
Well, there's some help in IVF that can help. Okay,
in vitro fertilization.
So let's say that you bring this together and you form a blastocyte.
Mm-hmm. The thing that's going to become a kid.
To become a kid, right?
A human kid, not a sheep kid.
While we can measure the aging, right? We can measure the aging of the sperm and the egg. This blastocyte turns back to zero. Okay, we know how to do it. We do it in our body, right? It's zero. It doesn't remember the age of the parents. All of us are starting zero again. We erase this memory of aging. I think with Dolly, this memory somehow hasn't been erased because of the technology. And she was born maybe her mother and father's age and maybe combined. You know, that's what might have happened. But never mind Dolly. I'm telling you, we know, our body knows how to erase age. And that's why I'm so optimistic that it's not only about targeting aging to delay it and to stop it maybe, but it's also about reversing part of aging that will be probably will happen in the past, in the future.
In the future.
For me, it's the past now. For me, it's already the past.
So, Julia, did that get to your question?
I think so. The students are very, it always comes up when we talk about Dolly the Sheep.
I don't know anything about your age, Julia, but I was alive. I was out there paying taxes, and I was an adult when Dolly the Sheep was born, and it was this revolution. How is this even possible? And so on. Your students know about Dolly, and they know about telomeres, but apparently there's no cause and effect. It's still a mystery. So, Julia, ask your students or tell your students to go out there and figure out what's going on between telomeres and aging.
Yeah, it means there's a lot of work for them to do, so they can be extra motivated.
Our marching orders.
Yes, now, exactly.
Do they know, do your students realize that you used to be a student?
I remind them a lot.
Like, do they, Nir, you were talking about when you saw your grandfather, it just, or your grandparents, it didn't occur to you that they had once been people, children,
right.
Subunits.
Right.
So do they see you in the grocery store and get freaked out, Julia? You know, that sort of
thing. Do they say, this is our old teacher?
Yeah. Students, I think they think we go into big cocoons at night. I don't think they expect us to see us
so
out
you,
in public.
You go yeah. into cocoons. That's what happened.
Thank you so much. I hope your students got something out of this.
Or they will.
Or they will. Or they will get something out of
this. Yeah, I'm sure they have. Thank you so much.
Science Rules will be right back.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
And now, more science.
Here's something I just wonder about all the time. In your studies of longevity, do people's attitudes about life affect the length of their lives?
Yes, so that's a great question. And actually, we wrote about three papers about that, of the attitude and personality and their effect of longevity. And I don't really believe them. Let me tell you why. So centenarians have a very positive attitude. And I'll give you this example. There's a 104-year-old man, and I went to talk with him, and he was the nicest guy I've ever seen. I mean, the guy was just, the way he talked about people, how he respect them, he has nothing bad to say on his daughter-in-law, you know. Everybody was good, everybody's good, and it was just a joy. And he had this optimistic personality and, you know, was really nice. And I'm getting out of my interview with him, and his son, 82 years old.
He's a kid. 82, he's
sitting,
a kid.
Sitting in the room, and I come to the kid and I said, what I just told you. I said, I couldn't believe it. It's the nicest guy I've ever seen. So the kid looks in my eyes and said, you should have seen the son of a bitch when he was my age. He was terrible.
When he was 82.
And then you realize, you know, we think personality doesn't change with age. And yes, if until 60 years old, they never went behind.
Wait, you're telling me there's like the terrible 82s?
Exactly.
People go through a crabby period
well,
then?
I don't know. But the 82 could have reflected most of the life. But then you get to be with exceptional longevity. There are physiological changes. You roll with a punches more, you know, you lost your wife, you go to another home, you go to an independent living or non-independent living. So there's a lot of happening. And what you see in centenarians at that time is not reflecting their past. And that's why it's important to do those offspring studies, because we can actually measure those personalities and their changes. And only then I can tell you really.
So you're saying that do you think that personalities change chemically or genetically, or do personalities change because people go, wow, I'm living a lot longer than I expected. This is pretty cool. I'm going to cheer up.
I'll tell you the answer that you'd like. In University of Pennsylvania, they took elderly people and young people, and they showed them pictures of nice things, you know, islands in Hawaii, or really terrible things like cockroaches in pizzas. Mm-hmm. And they showed them slides, and then everybody had to recall what they've seen. And of course, the elderly didn't recall as much as the young, but they recalled the good things mainly. Okay, and I think that's what's happening. I think it's a physiological change in the brain, and maybe it has to do with the fact that you're dealing with losses and stuff. By the way, I'm looking forward to that stage that I'll remember only the good thing. But I think that's in part what's going. It's really a physiology. It's physiological, and we should expect that.
Okay, let me ask you this. It has been said.
Did you like it, by the way, this answer?
I loved it. Okay. I'm feeling younger every minute.
Look at him. He's lighting up like a kid in a candy store.
He doesn't remember any bad things anymore.
I don't even know what you're talking about, bad things. After a 16-hour fest.
But hang on. I've reflected on the following idea many times. If you live to be 82 and 7 weeks, a month and 3/4, depends on leap days to get it exact, that's 30,000 days. That's a pretty good run. 82, right? But these people add another, gee whiz, 15,000 days. Well, 12,000 days. Don't they just feel good that they made it that far?
Well, the answer is yes. In fact, they become a little celebrities when they're 100 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, they usually have birthday and people mm-hmm. write on them about them on the papers. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is so. But let me ask you a question.
Please.
I'll give you two possibilities.
Scenarios.
Two scenarios. One is I'm going to make you immortal. Okay? I'm going to make you immortal.
God, wow, cool.
But there's a condition.
Damn it.
There's always a condition.
The freaking devil thing.
In aging, there is an exchange between reproduction and longevity. Almost all animals, and maybe in humans it's even more. You wonder if it's rearing the kids or or having the kids. But there's this exchange. So I'm telling you, I'm going to make you immortal. But the only condition is that we stop reproduction now. No more new kids. No more first birthday. No first laugh. No first love. Okay, we're just moving forward because that's what we can afford.
Okay. I mean, humankind.
To make everybody immortal, but that's it. There's
right.
No new people.
Right.
Nope. Don't want it. Tell you right
well,
now.
Well, I have to give you the other option because you have to choose one. The other option is I'm going to make you live healthy until you're 85 years old, but you die the next day.
Yeah, I'm going to go with option number two. I mean, I like longevity as long as the next person, but To me, the most exciting thing about living long would be to watch all the changes in the world. If you're stuck with this group of people, I've got a feeling.
Especially in here.
Yes, especially.
Well, can I just add, if the world really going to exist 12 billion years, we don't know, but that's what of the number.
The freaking sun explodes. Where are we going? It's going to be trouble.
Oh, long before the oceans evaporate. Don't you feel a little tired
now? You haven't started your life, right?
Yeah, the oceans evaporate in just about 1.5 billion years. We don't have nearly
600,000.
So we have Luke on the line. Luke, are you there?
Hey, everybody, I'm here.
Oh, and where is here? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. That's a good place.
Where are they can't
to grow
say
old.
Can't. Massachusetts.
How do you feel about the aging process? Are you fighting against it? Are you making peace with it?
Well, I'm feeling so about it myself. It's happening whether I like it or not.
Yeah, that is
calling
true.
Calling to ask a question about kind of a workaround.
Okay, fire away.
A workaround.
I'm all for the workaround. The kludge. The just cobble something together. What's your question?
Question for anybody who wants to answer it. Would you upload your mind into a computer if you were promised a body after, say, 50 years.
Oh, wait a second. Who's promising you a body? And what are they doing with it for 50 years?
Let's say science promised you a body after 50 years.
What kind of body am I getting? Am I getting a teenager or am I getting a centenarian?
A body of your choosing, let's say.
So I'm at the height of my powers. I'm playing center field for...
maybe even a different body.
Okay, but the key question is, first of all, would you upload yourself to a computer? Second of all, would you be willing to live in a disembodied state for 50 years with the prospect of being embodied at the other end? Am I getting at the kind of like the core of it?
Sure, that's about right. Assuming it's even possible.
We'll go with the premise of the question. All right, Nir, what would you say to this? First of all, would you want yourself uploaded to a computer?
Not the way Luke described it. By the way, Luke, how old are you?
I am 40 years old.
Uh-huh. You look a bit older than your age. Okay, I understand now. Luke, this is how I'm looking at it, because I'll ask the question differently and then you'll understand. One of the ways that we can fight aging, maybe we can get more than 115 years, is through regeneration. You know, let's use stem cells and let's replace every cell that we are losing.
Including our brain cell.
Including our brain cells. And that's where I think the question comes in. Because if you replace your brain cells, that means that your memory, your personality, you can do it only if you download that and then upload it on the new cells. Otherwise, it's not going to be you. So what's the point in that?
Right. You'd be the old you would be gradually fading away as new cells are coming in and new neurons are forming.
Right.
But then you'd become this new person. It would be like this, that the replacement you would be existing at the same time you are existing.
It's a little Invasion of the Body Snatchers, isn't it?
A little bit.
Okay.
Have you thought about it from this point of view? Or is it uploading and frozen? It's stored like a suspended animation and you don't know what happened. Then you wake up 50 years later and you're playing a center fielder for the Dodgers.
I was thinking about it more as suspended animation, but I'm curious about what you say. It seems like being fully aware but disembodied that whole time might be a little bit tiresome.
Yeah, I'd prefer to just have
a blank space.
Yeah, I'd find that kind of tedious unless you'd have access to the internet. But would you?
It is to be hoped.
Yes.
If you can find the right connector
or the code for
the Bluetooth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But by the end, after 50 years, like none of your apps work or they forgot to upgrade you. It can be a drag. Nir, you're saying that if you wanted to sort of biologically keep people going a longer time, that you might also need some advances on the sort of the artificial intelligence side to preserve your memories so you can keep kind of refeeding and updating your brain so you stay yourself.
Exactly. You said it better than I did. Thank you.
I'm an editor. It's my job is to repeat what people say.
Right. Exactly.
He repeats what people say.
There is another version of this idea that people like Ray Kurzweil talk about, these sort of singularity people, the idea of uploading your brain, not to stay in a physical form, but uploading your brain specifically to turn yourself into pure data to live in this disembodied existence.
It's like
of some
Luke's
kind.
Thing. It's Luke. You're still there. It's like your idea, but you never go back to a body. You just live as an electrovore out there in the cyber world of cyberness.
So I don't know, Luke. Is that something
a brain
you would ever,
in a jar?
Yeah. Would you ever want to do that?
I don't think so. I think I'd rather just call it quits.
What about you, Nir?
I wouldn't.
No, but you see. Why would you say that, Luke? Because I have a glib answer, but Luke, why do you say you wouldn't want to go that route?
Well, if you go that route, you don't get to find out what's next.
There you go. That was a great question. Thank you.
Wait, what is that sound?
That is the sound of lightning.
Oh.
Superheating the air so fast that it produces thunder.
So you're saying that it's time for a lightning round with Nir to ask him a bunch of rapid-fire questions for him to answer in some sort of short-format response that will create a quick give-and-take between all of us and create a fascinating and enlightening format for the listener?
That's exactly right.
You notice how I just cut that down to the smallest number of words?
I did not notice that.
Is it yes or no?
Short answers are encouraged.
So, Nir, Dr. Barzilai, are you ready for the lightning round?
Go ahead.
How long do you expect to live?
I would like to live to be 85 years old and die in my sleep.
All right. Keep us posted on that. Why do you choose 85?
I won't.
What do you mean you won't? Why won't you?
No, I won't let you know.
Oh, you won't keep
when
me posted.
Dead.
Yeah, yeah. As far as we know, you won't. Would you rather die at 60 or live forever without the sensation of touch?
60.
All right. What about freezing your head or your brain so that it can be revived in the future?
I don't mind a brain freeze with ice cream only.
Okay.
What flavor?
I like the Häagen-Dazs vanilla Swiss almonds.
That is a good one. Antioxidants, red wine, resveratrol, do those things actually extend lifespan or health span?
No. Antioxidants are generally good for the economy because lots of people buy them. So I don't have anything. They also don't do damage, you know, unlike other anti-aging, right, things.
Okay.
All right. Just something to keep in mind. If a person could live forever and remain a certain age, what is the best age for a high quality of some sort of indefinite life?
Well, I think wisdom is underappreciated. I think wisdom
well,
is really great.
Well, a guy your age would say that, Doc. Come on.
So I'm 63. I'll keep here.
So do you believe that we will have an effective anti-aging drug or therapy or regimen?
More than that, I think we already have medications that are in human use and needs to be repurposed. But I think that the future will have better drugs, combination of drugs, and we could really handle aging much, much better, or health span much, much better.
Meaning that it will become routine to live to 110 or 115 with a high quality of life.
Right. That will be the side effect. Yes.
What is the biggest myth about aging?
The biggest myth is that the striking thing is people look and they see aging. You know, they see aging better than they see what's your glucose level or cholesterol level or hypertension. So they know that there is a biology of aging, but they don't understand that this can be targeted. That's exactly the point. It can be targeted
by a regimen of healthy lifestyle.
Well, combination of lifestyle and drugs.
There you go. Dr. Barzilai, this has been the coolest thing. Thank you so much for taking the time to come in here. The time
was fun.
From your ever-shortening lives.
I don't know. I feel like the quality of my life is improving.
I feel like
just by being
improved.
Here. Yeah.
A regimen of drugs and lifestyle.
You've given me a little bit more
We're
quality
gonna
of life here.
We're going to be doing podcasts for another 50 years. I'm Bill Nye.
And growing older right over here, I'm Corey Powell.
And remember, when it comes to the healthy, long-lived part of our universe, science rules. Science Rules is produced by Jordan Bell. Claire Rawlinson is the senior producer. Our engineers are Jared O'Connell, Casey Holford, and Brendan Burns. Our episode was mixed by Casey Holford. Chris Bannon is the chief content officer of Stitcher. And remember, at Stitcher, science rules.
Stitcher.